This is our recent work on data center network, and I'm Chiao Hong from UIUC, and this is the joint work with Anki Singla, Lucian Popa from HP Labs, and my advisor, Brighton Godfrey. So let's begin with a quote. It's anticipated that the whole of the populous part of the United States will, within 2 or 3 years, be covered with a network like a spider's web. So this is actually from 1848. This is pretty old. So people are designing topology over hundreds of years already. And people usually have very different constraints when they are looking at different networks. For example, in the past, when people are building wide area network like a telegraph here, and you are constrained to build topologies constrained by the where the city is and the railroad is. And if you are building a data supercomputer network here, then you are constrained to topology that is very simple so that you can easily route to the destination without getting locked. And if you are building a supercomputer, if you are building an old school data center networks, then you are constrained to use, say, like a tree topology so that the spanning tree protocol can easily work. But spanning tree protocol sucks. Why care using spanning tree protocol? So today, in data center networks, we have great opportunities to build topology with great deal more freedom than we have ever had before. And in this talk, I intend to use this freedom to do something a little bit radical here. So what do we want? There's two goals when we build a data center topology. The first is we want high throughput, which is kind of trivial. Like you don't want bottlenecks in your data center networks, and you also want agile placement of virtual machines. Like there's a talk, data center network are in my way, from the James Hamilton of Amazon. The whole talk is about these 2 points. And another point, another goal we want to achieve is the incremental expansion. This is the ability to allow you to easily add or replace server and switches. So you don't need to build your data center at the to the final stage in the very beginning. You can build your data center incrementally as your business grows. So this requires more explanation. This is actually, incremental expansion is actually a very fundamental and real question for the industry. Like Facebook, they're adding capacity on a daily basis. This figure shows the total number of the servers, Facebook servers in their data center networks. And you can see that they are continuously add more capacity to their data centers. So there's certainly there are some commercial product also provide incremental expansion, like SGIS Cube and HP EcoPod. But all of this only tell you how to add servers. There's no mention about how to expand your network incrementally. So let me take a step back and look at what's today's high bandwidth structure network. So here the figure shows a Torus network, which has been used in supercomputer networks. And this is the Hypercube. It's been used in both supercomputer network and data center networks. And this is a FAT tree, sitcom FAT tree, used in for the data center networks. And this will be the topology I will talk more. We are comparing this as the baseline. So the point here we want to argue is these topologies have nice structure, but they also constrain ED expansion. They have very coarse design points. For example, like three-level FAT tree, it has to be built with 5K cube by 4 switches, where K is the switch port here for connecting to the other switches. So if you want to build a three-level FAT tree, use commodity switches, which has you have only very few choices of the port counts there. Say you have 24 ports, 32 ports, and 48 port switches, then the size you can build for data center is exactly like 3,000, 8,000, and the next stage has to be 27,000. So there's a big gap here. Yes, there is some workaround exists, but it's still unclear how to maintain structure incrementally. For example, if you want to expand a fat tree, you can probably unplug some edge in the cross level and add two servers in it. But this will give you uneven or constrained bandwidth. So this prevents our goal of having high bandwidth. And you can also alternatively leave some free ports for future expansion, but that's a wasted investment. All right. Since the structure impedes our goal of providing incremental expansion, so in this work, we propose the opposite. We have no structure at all. This is the topology we propose called jellyfish. So this is the figure we show jellyfish. So for each switch, they use some free ports as the server ports connect to the servers. And they use the remaining ports to connect to the other switches. That's what we call in the switch level, we form the random graph between switches. So the intuition here, why we named it jellyfish, is because jellyfish makes bandwidth less like a structured solid, but more like a fluid. And coincidentally, it also looks like a real jellyfish here. All right, here's the construction part. How do we build jellyfish? So suppose you have an existing random graph here. Every switch has three network ports, and they already use all their free ports. Suppose you want to add a new switch here with four free ports to connect to the other switches. Then what are you going to do in jellyfish is you randomly choose one edge, existing edge, and break it. So you have one free port for each endpoint there. Then you add these edges from the new switch to the both endpoint of the broken edge, like this. So by keep repeating doing this procedure, in the end, you'll use all your free ports. And that's the way we build jellyfish. So such a simple procedure can be used for both graph construction and incremental expansion. All right, here's some way we want to quantify whether jellyfish really provide you nice expandability. And the way we quantified it is to compare a relative work called LegUp. LegUp also provides incremental expansion in the way that it searches for the class network and build class network, expand the class network heuristically. So here the setup in the x-axis, we show different stages. And for each stage, we add more budgets to the network, so you have more money to buy more network equipment to increase your network capacity. And the y-axis here, we show the normalized bisession bandwidth, which is a measure of throughput here. So it has multiple stages, and LegUp built the data center network stage by stage. So each point is not independent, it's related to what we got in the last point here. And in this setup, we add servers only in the first two stages. So after that, you only buy more, each stage, you only buy more network equipment to increase the bandwidth. And as you can see, LegUp has strictly higher bandwidth in the later stages. So we compare this with jellyfish. And we found jellyfish, there's two points here. First, jellyfish provide double the bisession bandwidth as compared with the LegUp, which has the same network budget. And alternatively, another way to interpret this is we are 60% cheaper to support the same number of server with the same bisession bandwidth. So the point to be taken here is not LegUp is bad. LegUp try its best to search for the domain of heterogeneous class network. And to be able to do so, it has to reserve some free ports for future expansion at each stage. And while in jellyfish, we use all the free ports. And that's one of the major benefits we get here. So I hope I convinced you that jellyfish provide nice expansion property. But another issue we have is, our another goal is high throughput. Does the sloppy nature connection of the jellyfish prevents our goal of having high throughput? How how much we compromise by providing incremental expansion. To quantify this, we compare jellyfish with fat tree, which does not have incremental expansion. So this is the simulation, packet level simulation we did with random permutation traffic at the server level. So here the accesses show you the total equipment cost, basically the number of ports. And y-axis shows the number of servers that fat tree can support in the full throughput. And to compare with jellyfish, it's somewhat surprisingly that jellyfish has even higher throughput than fat tree built with the same network equipment. So at a scale of around like 3,000 servers, we can support 25% more servers. And the gap increased with scale. So this is the outline of the rest of the talk. So currently you are suspicious that why jellyfish work. You want to ask for some intuition here. We are work pretty well for both incremental expansion and also have even higher throughput than fat tree. So I will give you some intuition first. Then we look at the question, can we do even better than jellyfish? Then in the rest of the talk, I will talk about how to move from theory to systems. We look at some practical concerns there, like how to route and do congestion control and cabling issue in jellyfish. All right, so here's the intuition. If we can fully utilize all the available bandwidth in the network, so the total number of the servers you can support at full rate will be equal to the total network capacity you have divided by the capacity used per flow. So the total network capacity here is basically how many edges you buy. Each edge gives you some capacity, right? And the capacity used per flow is a measure of path length, how many hops each flow will take in average. So if your mission is to maximize the number of flow you can support at full throughput, then given the network project, so the link capacity, number of links does not change. The way you can do this is just to minimize the mean path length. So this is our mission here. And we want to give you the intuition that by comparing fat tree, jellyfish has much lower mean path length. All right, let's look at an example. This shows a visualization of a fat tree and a jellyfish with the same size. It's clearly to see that fat tree has much longer path length than a jellyfish. Oh, no one left, anyway. Let's look at a simpler example, smaller cases, so that you can clearly to see. This is the fat tree and jellyfish, basically the same number of servers, same is the 20 switches, and with degree 4. Everything is the same. So the red dots here are the switches, and the gray dots in the edge are the servers. All right, let's take a fat tree, look at the fat tree first. We choose one origin. Basically, it's symmetric, so anyone is the same. Then work for two hops. Then we find we reach one more server in the bottom. Then we go two more hops. For four hops, we can reach two more servers, again, in the bottom. So as you can see, that all the remaining servers will be reachable in exactly six hops. So the summary here is, fat tree, in this particular example, only 3 out of 15 can be reachable less than 6 hop. And the intuition why fat tree has such long path length is because most of the edges, most of links in fat tree are not useful for reducing path length. For example, for all those edges colored in red, I can remove them, while the path length distribution remains the same. All right, let's look at the jellyfish. Again, we randomly choose one origin and work one hop, two hop, three hop, four hop, five hop. So up to five hop, we already cover 11 servers that can be reachable in less or equal to five hops. There's only four corner cases here require six hops. And the main intuition here is because in Jellyfish, every hub you connect to random destination. So this will help you quickly cover a wide range of the neighborhood with small path length. And this is just an example show you in a very small scale. In our paper, we have evaluation for large scale, and the benefit was still held for large scale. I encourage you to check our paper for details. All right, here's another question we want to ask. We see Jellyfish beats Fat Tree by providing higher throughput and having a lower path length. Can we do even better than Jellyfish? By minimizing the path length here, I mean, in theory, there's this question. What's the maximum number of nodes in any graph with the degree and diameter constraint? So this is kind of similar question as the one we are looking at, right? So here's, they also have the degree constraint where we have, you know, each switch has per com constraint, it's the same. And in our question, we are kind of having a fixed number of nodes, and here they are maximizing number of nodes. While we want to minimize the path length, mean path length, here they have a degree diameter constraint, which is the worst case of the path length. So our conjecture is this, we told degree diameter bounded graph will give you high throughput by having a low diameter. So let me show you a very special example here where you have degree 3 and diameter 2. So what you get is the graph called Peterson graph, which has a maximum number of 10 nodes. And this is known to be optimal. So 10 is the maximum you can get. Here we show the table of different degree diameter bounded graph for different degree constraint and diameter constraint. And it turns out this is a very hard problem to solve. Only those number in both are known to be optimal. The remaining larger one are just largest known graph, not the optimal one. So the smallest one is the Peterson graph I just showed you in the last slide. And to quantify how well they are, we compare this degree diameter bounded graph with Jellyfish. And there is two interesting observations here. First, we found our conjecture is correct. Those degree diameter bounded graph do have high throughput, even higher than Jellyfish. And the second interesting observation is Jellyfish is also very close in all the cases we tested, within 9%. So the takeaway here is if you want to build a data center network with certain size that you can find in that table, then you can probably pick one degree diameter bounded graph and you got a high throughput. But the issue here is you cannot build it in an incremental expansion fashion, so you cannot expand it. All right, what we know so far is we have a Jellyfish topology, which will give you very incremental expansion and also high throughput. Okay, that's good, but there are some practical concerns here, right? We covered two of the practical concerns in this talk. One is the routing and congestion control issue, and the second one is the cabling issue. Let's first look at routing issue. So I show you the intuition with an assumption there where we assume that we can fully utilize all the available capacity, but there's a big if here. So how to effectively utilize capacity without structure? Like in Jellyfish, there's no certain structure that you can leverage. For example, in Fat Tree, you have crawl layer that you can load balance across crawl layer switches that will help you easily utilize the capacity in Fat Tree. But in Jellyfish, there's no such concept of, you know, layering. So how can we do? Here we evaluate different combinations of routing and congestion control protocol. For routing, we have tested ECMP and K-Show dispatch routing. For congestion control, we tried TCP and multipath TCP. So it turns out that ECMP does not work very well in Jellyfish because it does not provide large path diversity for us. And once you choose K-Show dispatch, Jellyfish works well in both using TCP or multipath TCP, at least as well as FAT3. So in our paper, we also provide some discussion about how to implement the K-shortest path. I encourage you to check our paper for this discussion. So this is the same figure I showed you earlier to show that Jellyfish has higher throughput than FAT3. This is actually the evaluation where we already consider this protocol in efficiency. So here the Jellyfish is actually using MPTCV over H-shortest path. So after consider all this routing and congestion control efficiency, we still got 25% more server at the size of 3,000 servers. And again, increase with scale. All right, and there's the cabling issue. Jellyfish looks like a real jellyfish, which is fine. But it also looks like a spaghetti with meatballs. So do we awaken the dread spaghetti cabling monster here? So the question here we're going to ask is, does Jellyfish make the cabling more difficult? All right, few points here. First, actually we have fewer switch-to-switch cables in Jellyfish to support the same number of servers as FAT3. So which is good, which reduced the cabling issues a little bit. And the second, we want to propose some optimization scheme to reduce the cabling work. So first idea is you can place all the switches centrally. Like in this figure, we show something in the central are all the switches, so you can put them all together in, say, one or two racks, called switch racks here in the central. Then you place other server racks around the switch. And the reason why this is desirable is because most of the cables in Jellyfish are switch to switch. So by doing so, you can greatly reduce the cable length. All right, so this actually fits into a shipping container model where by having all the cables are short enough, you can support a cluster with like 3,000 to 5,000 servers here. But if you want to build a larger data center topology, more than 3,000 to 4,000 servers, then you need to form multiple clusters. And here, the idea will be you can use aggregate bundles of cables for each pair of the clusters to make the cabling easier. There's one issue remains that in Jellyfish, if you really want to build a huge Jellyfish, large size, then most of the cable will end up to be long. Right, and which is bad because long optical cable will cost you more. Each one will cost you, say, $200 or more. So we don't want long cables. The idea here is there's a promising way to reduce the cable length by localizing a fraction of connections. So the way here is you can constrain your cable to connect to someone nearby you. And the detail of this scheme is in the paper again. So I just want to summarize the result that by doing this cable localization, Jellyfish can retain almost all its scans after matching the same number of the short and long cable as the FAT3. So by using the same cable length distribution, basically, our performance loss in throughput is less than 5%. So we are still like 19% better than FAT3 after taking this into account. All right, here's the conclusion. We proposed Jellyfish to use a random graph at a data center network, which gives you both high throughput and ED expansion. Sometimes, most of the time in the system design, you need to carefully explore the trade-off between two spaces, two worlds. But here, it seems like Jellyfish is the best in both worlds. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rohan from Purdue. I had a question on fault tolerance. So how is Jellyfish compared to FAT3 when a switch goes down or a link goes down?
So the question is, what if the link fails in Jellyfish? Is it really a severe problem in jellyfish? That's a very good question. And so in the high level intuition here is, suppose there's one link fails. Your jellyfish topology will become another random graph. It's still a random graph with just slightly smaller degree. So it doesn't really matter that much. And in theory, we have certain property that jellyfish are surely K-connected. So that is also some theory support here will tell you that this is good. You can check out paper for the details. And here I want to show you one figure. Here we randomly failed links. And we find the finding here is actually we are robust to the link failure as compared with the fat tree. Does that answer the question?
Hi, I'm Sid Sen from Princeton. So I really like the topology and the way it looks. I have two, I guess when I look at it, I have two concerns. So I thought maybe you could help me with that. The first is because it's a random network, you're losing the ability to aggregate prefixes. I don't know how big a deal this is for a large data center network. So I was wondering if you looked at the effect on routing table state. And then the other thing I was wondering is you have, because it's a random graph, you have long and short paths. Maybe this isn't a big deal in a data center, but does that affect the way you use multipath protocols?
Right, let me answer you. I didn't get clear.
So the first question was if, because it's random, the fact that you can't aggregate prefixes for routing, is that a problem when it comes to routing table state?
Okay. For that question, there are some certain tools you can use, right? For example, you can use like dictionary lookup things to look at what's the destination you want to route here. And I don't have very good answer for this question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks.
Hi, Ben Zhao, UC Santa Barbara. So I was wondering, first off, really nice talk. I liked it a lot. Question that I had in mind, I wasn't quite sure whether you had thought of. So there's an issue where what you're talking about, the nice properties, happen because of the fact that you have partially filled up slots. In other words, when you add more machines, there are always empty slots that you can hook up new links to, right? So the problem happens, what happens when your network is full? In other words, you've added all the links and your links are actually, slots are all taken. And it seems then that when you add new machines, you're actually losing your nice random path properties, because then you're essentially, you've got a full click and then you're adding onto a link and all the paths leading to the new nodes are essentially at least one hop longer.
So there's some design choice here you can take, right? In the usual cases you are tested, most of the data center you build, if it's large enough, then you will have enough port count, so you will build not that full bisection. Basically, it's not full mesh. But if you allow, your budget allows to have a full mesh, and that's also nice. Right? Depends on the budget you have and what kind of equipment you buy. And so for the cases we tested, we don't see there is a full mesh issue here. While there's another issue I can mention is it's possibly that if your budget is small, then you may end up building a very sparse graph here. Like every switch may have very few connectivities here. And this may come with another issue I would like to mention here is people usually have a concern that, random is bad. You can easily get, say, partition, especially in some very sparse cases. So in that case, you can actually plug in our tools to look at, if I end up getting a very bad random graph or not. So our tool can support up to like several thousands of servers, the scale you can test it.
So sorry, just one follow-up, tiny little quick question. So
sure.
Have you guys thought of any guidelines as to how to keep enough slots open as you're adding new links so that you maintain this nice incremental random links property? Or is that an issue? Maybe I'll take that offline.
Okay. Thanks.
Let's take one more question and one to next talk.
Okay. Charlie Hu from Purdue. So very nice talk. So when you put up this slide showing the so jellyfish beating a factory for performance-wise, so I keep thinking there's no free lunch here, right? Something's got to give here. So what we are giving up here is really this nice hierarchical locality of factories. So which comes in handy when you have, for example, you know, you have hundreds of jobs sharing the data center network, right? And then if you have factories, it's very natural, you know, much easier to allocate, say, a subtree for each job. And you have much smaller the diameter and still have good bisection bandwidth. And but if you're using a jellyfish, how are you going to handle this, you know, allocating a subset of the network for jobs and still maintaining, you know, small diameter and bandwidth?
Right. So if I got your question correctly, you are saying that for structured topology, there are certain structures you can use to build some application easily, right?
Well, when they manage out sharing the data center network, right, you're going to allocate, it's much easier to allocate a sub-network out of a factory and maintaining less locality property. Okay. How do you do this in jellyfish? Okay, so.
Right, that's actually a very interesting question, and we are also looking at this direction right now. And to give you some intuition here, there's some way in theory, at least, you can embed some graph on top of the random graph so that you can get, for example, you can embed, say, hypercube on top of jellyfish with a very small loss in path length here. So you can do this with some cost, yeah. And we are currently looking at this. That's a very good question. Thanks.